remind you of two flavor problems. First one is the standard model flavor puzzle. Let's focus on the quark sector, which is well measured. There you have 10 parameters, and they exhibit a hierarchy in roughly 0.2. So you have a top Yukawa, which is order 1. Then you have the other Yukawas, which range from 1 to roughly lambda to the 6 for the down quark. And then there's also the hierarchy in the CK matrix itself. So the off-diagonals, again, range from something which is 0.2 to something which is of the order 10 to the minus 3. And there is an order 1 weak phase as well. So the standard model flavor puzzle is, why do we have this structure? Now, we have nothing to say about it. The answer may well not be related to TV scale, but this is not the problem I'm addressing. Then there's another flavor puzzle, the new physics flavor puzzle, which goes like this. If you have new physics at TV, as we would expect, for instance, from hierarchy problems, or solving hierarchy problem, you need some extended sector at TV. But if you put in generic flavor structure for these new states, you will generate flavor-changing neutral currents. Therefore, you would really have to have these states sitting well above the TV, and that's the new physics flavor problem. And for this flavor problem, I will assume a particular solution, the minimal flavor violation. This assumption will not be important for the first part of my talk. So I'm just telling you in advance what I'll do in the rest of the talk. So again, nothing about the standard model flavor puzzle, but at some point I will assume a particular solution for the new physics flavor puzzle. Okay, so let me go a bit deeper. This will probably bore at least half of the audience, but I think it's still good to go through this even though it's kindergarten stuff, it's maybe good to remind oneself about it. So what I'm talking about is about the new physics flavor puzzle. So the way you could potentially solve it. So let me look at the contributions to this meson mixing. So let me look at the effective Hamiltonian, for instance, for B sub D mixing, where you mix through the top box. Here are the W's, and this is in standard model. That would be the piece which sits here, the V minus A squared operator. And then you have the different CKMs, always dominated by the top. For instance, if there is a B here, there would be VTB, I is for B, and a D would have a VTD. And let's plug in some new physics, which is suppressed by 1 over lambda new physics. So lambda new physics is the new physics scale, and let's take this coefficient, a Wilson coefficient, to be order 1. So now let's look at different constraints from different mixings. For instance, from KK bar mixing, well, the difference in this formula is really just from the CKMs. So there is the, I'm sticking in, instead of an I, there's a VTS. This is lambda squared suppressed. VTD is lambda cubed. You turn things around, and you find that the new physics scale has to be of order of 10 to the 4 TV in order not to have larger than the standard model contributions. For B sub D mixing, the only difference is that instead of having VTS, you have VTB, which is order 1. VTD is lambda cubed. You turn the formula around. Again, I'm always assuming that the Wilson coefficient is 1, so that the new physics scale is now 500 TV. For B sub S mixing, the only change is in the CKMs. Now the suppression is even less. It's only lambda squared. You turn things around, and you see that the new physics scale has to be 100 TV at least, not to see anything, right? So the difference between different scales needed for new physics with generic flavor had to do with the fact that the standard model contributions are suppressed by different CKMs. So you see, right?
Sorry, right. Do I understand correctly that the standard model computation is the C0 term?
Yes.
Computed box diagram.
Right.
I get this.
Yeah, you get the C0. I am simplifying things a bit, but that's roughly it. So it's C0 plus something. For KK bar mixing, it's a bit more involved. But just to make this argument, right? So you see, if you want to have something which sits at one TV, what you need to do is somehow you have to emulate this CKM suppression. So this CKM suppression should sit also on the new physics part. And that's, of course, there are many models which would do this for you. For instance, one approach would be that how you can emulate the standard model hierarchy, well, it would generically come out if you make the following hypothesis, the minimal flavor violation hypothesis, which would state that the flavor also in new physics sector is only broken by the standard model Yukawa's. So the flavor group is broken in standard model by the Yukawa terms, so let's make the minimal assumption that exactly the same thing also breaks the flavor in the new physics. And it's a non-empty set, for instance, MSSM with gauge-mediated Suzy breaking force into this minimal flavor violation set. Right, so another thing that I want to cover, yeah. You could say that it's the only one, because I think for all the other ones, you have to make some additional assumptions. Yeah, let's say universal extra dimensions would be one, but there you have to, the UV completion is not breaking flavor. That's the assumption for the universal extra dimensions. So universal extra dimensions are sort of natural, but you do have to also state that also the UV completion is minimally flavor violating, for instance. Right. Okay, so, yeah. Right, so for instance, for MSSM, it's the equivalent of saying that in MSSM it's dominated by gauge mediation and not by gravity mediation, for instance, right? Okay, a very useful bookkeeping device was developed by these people 8 years ago using spurious analysis. So I know that I have an enlarged flavor symmetry if I put Yukawa's to zero. So if you take Yukawa's to zero, I have U3 cubed flavor symmetry. So U3 for the rotating of the left-handed doublets, the U3 for the rotating of the right-handed up quarks, and U3 for the down quarks. However, if you promote Yukawa's formally to also transform as a bifundamentals under this flavor group, now the whole Lagrangian is at least formally invariant under the flavor group. Once I write down the low energy effective field theory, it should also be invariant up to these breakings introduced by the Yukawa. So that's how you can write down a low energy effective theory just assuming I have minimal flavor violation. So you don't have to postulate what the new physics extension really is. The only thing you need to do is keep track of where to stick the Yukawa's. So why is this useful? So let's look at the possible flavor violating structure. Let me look just at the bilinears. For instance, if I have Q bar Q, I can stick in YU dagger to any power, and this would be asymmetric, so it would be a singlet under flavor. While, for instance, I'm not allowed to stick in YD dagger because that's not going to be a flavor symmetric, and it's not going to be a singlet under flavor, right? Q dagger transforms under U3Q. YD dagger would have a U3D there, so that would be the piece which is incorrect. This approach also gives you the standard model-like suppression of flavor-changing neutral currents. Why? Because the up Yukawa's, when you go to, let's say, in the down mass spaces, it will be a diagonal. The Yukawa which is different from one or much different from one is just the top. So there's the one sitting there. And there's the CKM, because I'm rotating into the up basis. So for instance, let's check for the B sub S mixing. I have to project out the 3-1, the 3-2 part, So I'll get, for instance, from this side, 3-3 entry, which is VTB, which is 1, and a 3-2 entry, which is just the VTS. So that works. So from this general analysis, you get the right suppression. Okay, so let me stop here and really start my talk. So the outline of my talk is first I'll cover the experimental situation, then I'll do the model-independent fit, and then go on to what it tells us about new physics. So right now, I'm not assuming any new physics, no extension, so it's completely unbiased until the third point. Right? So I'm making a break again. So experimental situation, just see what's going on. If you look at this plot, that's the it shows different constraints from different parts of the low energy flavor constraints. And the combined one is this very hard to see region. It looks impressive, no? All these different measurements seem to point to the same part in the rho bar eta bar plane, which tells you the following. It tells you that the standard model Kobayashi-Maskawa mechanism does dominate in these low energy observables, because from, let's say, from Keon system to the BDKs to the B sub S, they do point to the same region of parameter space. Yeah.
What is the sign to beta?
The sign to beta is here.
Yeah, but there's another one.
There's this one?
Yeah.
That one is the other solution. However, this is it's not preferred by the JPSI-K star. There's another measurement where you can resolve this ambiguity. It's only, okay, I don't think you, I don't know what the confidence level is. It's not 95% confidence level. That's why it's still there. But it's, I don't know the significance, but it's definitely not a preferred solution. Okay.
It says on your thing, confidence level.
It says 95? Okay, could be. Yeah. As I say, I don't remember the confidence level, but the measurement is JPSI-K star. So there is a, you can resolve the ambiguity. Okay, so it seems like it's, there is a very good agreement. However, there are some odd bits and pieces that do not fit. For instance, if you change the error on epsilon k and include the measurement of b to tau nu, that's the plot that you would find. That's from Lunghi Songhi, Sony. I think Sony in 2 weeks is going to talk more about this. And you see that, yeah, sure, it points into the same part of the region of the parameter space, but there seems to be a slight disagreement between different measurements. All right, so let me move on to the tension. So the first one is the determination of VUB from the branching ratio of B to tau nu, which does not agree with global fit. So let me show you another plot from a different group, from CK and Fitter. So what's plotted here is, do the global fit to the CKM matrix elements, and then predict the following. Predict sine 2 beta. So sine 2 beta is not in the fit. So you predict sine 2 beta and the branching ratio of B to tau nu. This is the measurement. And these are the predicted values with the color coding for the confidence levels set here. So you see that this is about, it's at the 2 sigma level disagreement. Another one is this possible tension between epsilon k and the rest. Depends on lattice bk. And there's the 3-point something sigma tension with standard modeling B sub S mixing. And this is the main topic of my talk. I will not try to address these two because it involves less, I mean, it involves more input from theory, I think. So I want to do the minimal input from theory. So this is my philosophy. There is a parameter called BK, the back parameter, which you determine from lattice QCD. Yeah, from lattice QCD. And the crucial point is the assignment of errors. So do you believe the assignment of errors or not? Yeah. So I don't want to enter into that discussion. Right? So my philosophy, yeah.
Can I pick your brain for a second? have a strong opinion about Beta Tau Nu, and because I've looked at it and I don't, it seems that it's a solid analysis to me that there is an issue there. Do you have anything in your mind that you know that is says that it's not actually a real issue?
No. I just okay. I think if I want to do a model independent analysis, I have to make an additional assumption in order to put this in. And I will do after my fit. I will include the beta tau nu and show you the results. Okay. But for now, I want to do the minimal thing, which is the following. I want to tensions that require minimal theory inputs. I don't want any QCD info, right? For the beta tau nu, I need to know the decay constant for the B. And I want the model independent interpretation. For me, that means the following. I have, essentially, I have four measurements, and I will fit it with four parameters and just plot the curves that I get.
So yeah. Can you take a ratio of beta tau mu to some other parameter, which I'm forgetting, to get rid of most of the lattice uncertainty?
Right. You can divide by delta MD.
That's
so
right.
That's that, in that way, you get rid of FV you still have a problem. So it seems that beta tau nu is a problem.
Okay.
Then the anomaly will be mainly driven by this like sign dimuon anomaly, and there is an indication of new physics phase in the B sub S mixing. Okay, so let me review this test. First dimuon anomaly. So you have PP bar collision. You create either a B0 and a B0 bar. One of the two will oscillate. For instance, let's take the B0 oscillate in B0 bar, and then they decay. Both decay semi-leptonically, and you end up with the same charge leptons if the B0 oscillates. Right? And you measure the following. You measure the number of events with positively charged 2 muons, minus the number of events with negatively charged 2 muons, and you normalized it. The measurement is at the order of 10 to the minus 2, 3 sigma away from 0, while standard model is at the order of 10 to the minus 4, so negligible at this point. You see that there is definitely there is a 3.2 sigma anomaly. There is one caveat here that experimentally you don't really know that it comes from a B, so I will assume that it comes from a B. There are cross-checks that the experimentalists did that it looks like it's coming from a B, but it's not. The Bs are not tagged, so you don't know that it's really coming from a B. Yeah, there is a vertex cuts and things like that. So these are wide enough that you could potentially let in some other type of new physics. Right. Okay. Right. And so the semi-leptonic asymmetry is coming from B sub S and B sub D. At Tevatron, you're producing both B mesons, the B sub S and B sub D. And the weights of the combined semi-leptonic asymmetry is roughly half of it can come from the semi-leptonic asymmetry of the B sub D. And there's another 0.5 for the B sub S. And the new measurement is consistent with previous ones. So this is the new measurement, the red band. That's the D0 measurement. As you see, it's a sum of the semi-leptonic asymmetry in B sub D and a semi-leptonic asymmetry in B sub S. And there are also measurements of the two separately from the B factories, the semi-leptonic for B sub D. And D0 also has a measurement of B sub S semi-leptonic asymmetry by itself. And you see that there is a nice agreement between the three. However, this one is away from the standard model. Now, the other input will be the measurement of the mixing phase in B sub S. Right? So if you look at the time decay of B sub S goes to J psi phi, what you can measure there is the decay width difference and the phase, the weak phase. This weak phase should be zero in standard model. So that's plotted here. So this is a standard model, has a weak phase mixing which is zero. And these are the 1 sigma and 95% confidence level contour and 99% confidence level contours. This is for all the data before May 2010, where, and it shows the combined CDF and D0. And this is the delta gamma, so the decay width difference in B sub S mesons. So this is about 2 sigma away from standard model. Now, the problem is that this is all data, and there's no such combination from the CDF and D0 available yet. So we had to do something, right? We cannot just ignore that there are new data. So what we do is the following. It may appear odd to you at first, but I'll explain why we had to do this. So we'll use new CDF measurement, but all D0. It's a conservative choice. If we want to pump up the, if potentially want to pump up any significance to the deviation. So why the new data for CDF? Well, the CDF, it moved closer to standard model. It's now 0.8 sigma. Okay, so if we are, if there's any deviation, the fact that we're taking in new data will diminish the significance, so that's good. The problem is that there's no 2D log likelihood available. So the only thing that we're able to use is the projection of the log likelihood on the weak phase, where you ignore the constraint on delta gamma, so the decay width difference. It's consistent with other measurements, however, it's closer to the standard model. So that's what we're using from CDF. However, for D0, we use the old 2D log likelihood. The reason is that the new data uses constraints on the strong phases which come from BD to JPSI-Phi. It uses SO3. I mean, it's a reasonable assumption, but if we want to combine with CDF, it's good that we use exactly the same, that there is no additional constraints that, that enter. The good thing is that the fact that we're using old data probably doesn't bias us too much. If it does, it probably biases us again in the conservative way, because previously the deviation was 0.57 plus these errors. Now the deviation, the central value went up, but the errors also went up. So there's definitely the two measurements of D0 are consistent, right? The fact that we're using the old data, we don't expect we really change the contours much for us. Okay. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. It took them quite a while to combine the data previously. It was the same problem. The D0 had to redo their analysis without this additional constraint on phases, and that took a while. So I don't know. I don't know what will happen. Okay, so what does it all mean? Is it new physics or is it just a statistical fluctuation? So of course, since I'm giving a talk here, I'll explore this first possibility of new physics. What I'll do is the following. Assume that the dominant effect is due to new physics in the mixing. And since the reason is that the decay amplitudes, you have to compete with three-level standard model processes. So it seems like a reasonable assumption to make. So as soon as we make this assumption, I can do a general analysis. As I said, I'll fit for 4 parameters, essentially from four measurements. Plus, I'll explain better. So as soon as I say it's coming from the mixing, what do I have at my disposal? Well, everything is governed by the matrix element, the transition matrix element between B0 bar and B0 for B sub D and B sub S. If it's off-shell new physics, the only thing I'm changing is the real part of this matrix element. So now this guy can have a weak phase and an amplitude. So that's it. These are the 4 things that I'm fitting for. The parameterization I'm using is slightly different. So I normalize to the standard model value for these matrix elements. So the deviation from standard model will be given by H, the size of it. So H equals 0 means no new physics. And the phase is sigma. So sigma D for the B sub D system, sigma S for the B sub S system. And there's a factor of 2 here that you might want to remember. And then the observables that we use are the following. Is the difference of the decay of the mass eigenstate values for B sub D and B sub S, the decay width difference, the semi-leptonic asymmetries, the sine to beta for J psi k and the mixing in psi phi, so the mixing phase. Right. The fit we've done with the secant theta package, the correlation between the two systems, the B sub S and the B sub D, is coming only through the semi-leptonic asymmetry. Furthermore, the decay width is floated in the fit, the decay width difference. Why do you want to do this? Well, there is a standard model prediction. The data favors a slightly larger value, so you don't want to bias your result by relying on this prediction. One reason would be, okay, it uses OPE while energy release is small, right? So I don't want that somebody comes to me and says, oh, but you use delta gamma and, you know, OPE is not really working. Okay, so just scratch it. I'll just float it and see what comes. So this is, again, a conservative approach. Okay, so the results of the fit are the following. First, let's look at the 8 sub S, 8 sub D. So these are the magnitudes of the deviations normalized to the standard model. There are two preferred regions. And you see that for the 8 sub S, you're at the order of one correction. So one is at 0.5, and the other one is the size of about a 2 compared to the standard model. While the contribution to B sub D are smaller, at the level of, let's say, 20%. Right? So that's one thing you learn. The other thing that you learn is that the large part of this allowed region, or maybe I should say that this is 1 sigma, 2 sigma, and 3 sigma allowed regions. And this is the standard model. So you see that you're more than 3 sigma away from standard model once you do the fit. So the other thing that you learn is that the preferred part of the parameter space wants to have HS larger than H sub D. So larger contributions in B sub S mixing than in B sub D. This line here is when the two contributions normalized to the standard model are the same. So that would be the universal scenario. And this is where HS equals 5 HD. Again, the HS and HD are contribution normalized to the standard model. Now let's look at the phases. Yeah. Was about 2.5 bigger, but it's relatively shallow. So, yeah. H sub S versus the phase. So you see that, remember that it was e to the I 2 sigma. So it means that when you're at pi 1/2, you're canceling against the standard model, that would be this line. While if you're above, you're canceling against the standard model, but you also have an imaginary part. And H sub D, so the contributions are at the level of 20%. It's the same phase, so you want to have a phase sigma which is above pi. And that's the preferred region. Okay, so the patterns that you see in the data, most of the favored parameter space has HS larger than HD. H sub S being much larger, H sub D is preferred, but H sub S, roughly of the order of H sub D, is still allowed. So here you cannot really say that this is ruled out. For instance, if we set the fit where we take this universal condition, you get something which is still quite reasonable. The contributions, however, are small, 20%, because you're not you're constrained by B sub D system. But the phase is, of course, it's again in this upper corner. Okay, so now let me comment on B2 tau nu. So CKM FITER also performed a fit where they included a B2 tau nu by assuming that there is no new physics in the decay, and it goes in the right direction. So the way you can see this is that since the phase was in the upper corner, you were canceling against the standard model. So the mixing phase that you would see in B sub D is smaller than the real phase. So that's the measurement. Since you were canceling against the standard model, the real phase is up here. So you push you push the true value of sine to beta sits here, and the agreement is much better with the measurement. So if you do the combined fit, now going from 3.2 sigma, which was our fit without beta tau nu, you go to 3.7 sigma. So there's a significance if you include beta tau nu as well. Okay, summary of what I've done so far. So I... No, that's the secant fitter result.
That, so
the numbers agree. So
it's 3.5.
The 3.2?
I thought it was 3.5, the combined with beta tau nu, but I might be misremembering.
Okay, well, let's check. Let's check. But I think it's 3.7. Okay, so the summary of what we've done so far. So present data support the hypothesis of new CP violation.
They had their initial one, and then they had their update. Which one are you agreeing? Which one was the 3.7? Is this the update or the initial?
No, the initial, I guess.
Okay, that's probably this.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Good, so I have to check if that number changed. Okay, so present data support the hypothesis of new CP violation contributions, and that it mainly contributes to delta F equal to mixing amplitude. You see, I assume that it only comes in the mixing, and the significance did not drop when I combined different pieces of the puzzle. Right? It could go that different parts of the different measurements would point toward different models. Right? Then the significant, I would not be able to combine them.
By just assuming it's in the mixing, it's a sign that you don't want to play with the decays.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But also you have to assume a bigger decay.
On delta gamma, you're worried about delta gamma?
I'm just wondering, like, say I'm the one who did the calculation for the standard model.
You would be extremely unhappy.
I really believe this prediction, right?
Yeah, so let's say if I fix delta gamma, what happens is that the goodness of the fit will go down just because you're forcing delta gamma to be not at the minimum. However, the deviation from standard model is the same. It's exactly the same significance, right? So both the fit, assuming standard model and new physics, the goodness of fit of both of them will go down, but the difference between them stays the same. So new physics is preferred at the same level, whether I float delta gamma or I don't float.
Like, is it a good fit if I fix?
Oh, okay. Okay, let me see if I remember this correctly. I think you go from goodness of fit, which corresponds about 20% to 5. Okay. I mean, it's really not statistically significant, the shift, right? But these numbers are, you know, they're coming from 1 year ago. So, but I think it's roughly in this ballpark. Okay. And
it's not like people decide that. It corresponds to an expansion of lambda over that, which is like an expansion of what, like a third or something.
Well, for example, what would your
what would who?
In CKM, when they do their fit, CKM fitter does their fit, do they stick to the standard model prediction? I think they do, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
But
that's why the numbers are the same. No? Mm-hmm.
What was that? I don't think they would say that the OP is well behaved. They would acknowledge there's an issue, right?
Never read that.
No, who would acknowledge? I didn't quite catch that.
Mirror.
Nearstep?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so with what Uli does, I mean, this is the discussion I don't want to enter, right? It's because, you see, because at every step I try to do the conservative thing, right? So I don't want to bias myself. But of course, there's issue that you could worry in principle, right? There's the OPE and the fact that you're rearranging the one or MB terms such that you get the best significance. I mean, you can always make a worry about this, of course.
People were complaining about this before any of the economics, right? So long standing.
Yeah. Okay, so the other thing is that these standard model extensions with the universality are not preferred. So we would like to have bigger contributions to B sub S than B sub D. Okay, so now to this third part, where I go into the models, and I assume minimal flavor relation and this general minimal flavor relation. So just let me remind you what the minimal flavor relation is. So these are the new physics models where the breaking of the flavor group only comes from the standard model you cover. Furthermore, you want to have expansion in this U-covers, the up and D, the down U-covers. Sometimes additional assumptions are made when people write down the models. For instance, that CP is only violated by the U-covers as well, or that you only have standard model for quark operators. I will not make these assumptions, and for simplicity, I work in large tangent beta limit for what I show you. So let me pose one question. Is that, well, this up and enlarged tangent beta, also the down quark you cover, have order one eigenvalues, the top and the bottom you cover. So why are we able to expand in terms of the you covers, right? In general, I could write down an operator like this. However, I was expanding in the you covers. So one option would be that it's not really that I'm expanding in new cars, but there's an additional piece in front of them. So I'm expanding in these epsilons, which are much smaller than one, and then series truncates after first few turns because these extra pieces are small. So that I would call linear MFV. And that's why I get an expansion in the new cars. The other option is that these epsilons are not there. They're order one, and higher order terms are important. That's what I would call a nonlinear MFV. And here you need to reorganize the expansion. And one interesting question would be, can you really experimentally distinguish between two cases, between the linear case and the nonlinear case? Why would that be interesting? For instance, if you have gauge-mediated Suzy breaking, these epsilons would correspond to how long the running is, right? You'll get the 1 over 16 pi squared times the log of the running. So if you would know what the values of epsilons are, that would potentially give you more insight into the breaking. Okay, so now let me reorganize the series, the expansion. So I'm in the regime when there's no epsilon, so epsilons are order one, and I need to explain why I'm able to expand in the U-covers. And the answer is that I'm not, the U-covers itself are not the spurions, because the top is order one. If I want to use a spurion language, I need to have, the spurions should be small numbers, right, so that I'm able to expand, that the whole approach makes sense. Right, so now I need to identify the small numbers. The whole formalism is inspired by a nonlinear sigma model. So what you can see is that, well, the standard model flavor group is broken by the top and bottom U-cover. And then they're broken down to what? Well, they're broken down to the U2 subgroup for the left-handed doublets, the U2 subgroup for the right-handed up quarks, the U2 for the down quarks, and there's an extra U1 that stays there. So now let me take out all the... let me rewrite this in the exponentiation of the coset space of this standard model over the unbroken standard model flavor group. So that would be these pieces here, that piece there, that would correspond to choosing a basis, right? It's like the Goldstone bosons, the would-be Goldstone bosons that you can eat when you gauge fix, right? And then there's a piece, the physical piece, that you cannot rotate away. It's there because of the doublets. The doublet group. If the weak, if you didn't have gauge interactions, the gauge group would be even bigger. That's the reason why you would have, for instance, two different cosets. However, there is, as soon as you switch on the gauge interactions, I have a CKM. So that's the one that you cannot rotate away. And that's the leftover Yukawa. Right, so what are the spurious fields now? Well, the spurious field is this chi. Chi is a 3x3 matrix. There's a fundamental, so a vector, a two vector, which is a fundamental of the unbroken UQ. This unbroken UQ is really broken by the small, the first two generation masses. These are here, sit here in the 2x2 corner of the Yukawa. And these are small numbers, right? The chi here will take the values of the CKMs, and phi u will take the values of the up or down Yukawas, for phi u, the up first two generation Yukawas times the CKM mixing. So I did everything for you. I identified the transformation properties under this UQ group, and I also showed you what the expectation values would be. Right. So let's say if you compare, what did this buy me? So if you compare with the usual MFE notation, for instance, this is really for the expert. I think everybody else is already asleep. But for Brian and Mike, that could be interesting. Okay. So let's say you look at the usual MFV, where you expand in different powers. So YUY dagger, YUY dagger squared, and then also YUY dagger times YDY dagger, and so on. So if you only keep the leading pieces, that will be the VTB, VTS, for instance, through the top, and there is a piece which goes through the charm, and then a piece which again goes through the top, which is YB squared suppressed. So if you're in the linear regime, the terms which come with higher powers of Yukawas would be suppressed. So A1 would be the larger piece, while A2 and B2, the ones which come with higher powers of Yukawa, would be smaller. In the nonlinear MFV, all these pieces are important. And B2 can be complex, for instance. In GMFV notation, you see, that would be the mixing term. Chi is the doublet of the U2Q. So that would be the mixing term. And then there is also another for the delay, the down quark, the first two generation down quarks. Again, the mixing term. And there is a piece which is suppressed by the masses. If you expand it, you have a at leading order, you had this relation between the CB and the upper one, and the C top and the upper notation. Right? Again, so you capture everything there is, right? Just by doing the GMFV. Right? And this is plus the dots. There is no dots here. That's what you gain, right? This is up to higher orders. If these A1, A2, and B2 are all of the same order, I should keep all orders here. Here there's an expansion in chi. It really is an expansion because chi is a small number, right? Okay, so why is this useful? Or is this useful at all, right? Okay, it's useful if one was interested in higher order terms in this expansion. You would be interested in higher order terms. That would be, of course, very useful.
Uh-huh. Is there any way to really study the nature of the series with all this technology you guys have built, like see if it's an asymptotic series, or just if it's any of its mathematical properties? If you start to slowly, you know, tune yourself from the linear case to the non-linear mm-hmm. case, do you guys ever look at that?
No. We didn't study that.
I don't think it's like a usual sort of iterative expansion where it's going to be an asymptotic series at all.
Okay, I don't know.
Okay, don't worry.
Yeah. Why it's useful, it could be, I mean, I think the most useful thing is that you can make general statements relatively easy. Because now I really have an expansion in small parameters, so I can cut at some terms. So for instance, a statement that you can make is the following about CP violation. So using GMFE formalism, I can prove the following very easily. So assuming you have minimal flare relation, then you can have significant new CP violating effects only if there are new flavor diagonal CP sources. Right? So why is this? It's because when I expand in these small parameters, I will truncate after the first series, the first term. The first term gives me the standard model-like contributions. So now the only thing I need to check, so that gives me only CP violation, which is already in the Yukawas. Right? Now the only thing I need to check is that any flavor diagonal weak phase I can construct needs to be small. That's, again, easy to see. So the leading CKM-generated flavor diagonal phase is this beast here, which is extremely small, right? It's suppressed by MS squared, MC squared, and it's 10 to the minus 9. So that's it. So if you want to have any beyond the standard model CP in the low energy, you need to have these flavor diagonal CP sources. Right? And that's a worry. Okay, let me spend one slide about the contributions to B-mixing. There are two classes of non-Hermitian delta B equal to effective operators. Why you need non-Hermitian operators is because the coefficient in front, in that case, can be complex. There's two classes, and they're distinguished by the fact of whether or not you have the right-handed down quark, so the first two generation quarks in the operator or not. So for instance, in class one, you do not have this. So the first generation quarks are left-handed. Why is that important? It's important because you don't have to put a mass term in there. So you see there's a chi, which is just the CKMs sitting in there. Class two, this would be the operators where you do have right-handed first generation quarks there. And in order to make it flavor singlet, you need to put a chirality flip there, right? You need to put the masses in there. Right, so why is this interesting phenomenologically? Well, this class one is the what I call universal. The universal operators. Universal because the chi gives me the standard model suppression, the CKMs of the standard model. So if I'm normalizing new physics contributions to standard model, I get exactly the same contributions to B sub D and B sub S. Right? This was the not preferred scenario. The class two operators are the ones where I have mass terms here. So that will, when I plug in S right, this would project the mass of the down quark, the Yukawa of the S quark. When I take D right, it would project out the Yukawa of the down quark. So you see that the contributions to the B sub D are down by the Yukawa of the down quark compared to B sub S mixing, right? So that's what's written here. So you really want to have at least a large part of the contribution has to come from these class two operators. No, it was at two sigma level. I can go back to the, how do I go back?
This is a fit which has a new.
Okay, so here we go. Okay, that's, it's, this is two sigma, that's one sigma. And this is the universal.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, I'm saying something slightly differently. As far as the p values of the general CKM fit, you fit for there's being flavor universal phase versus being flavor non.
Oh, this I don't remember what the p values are. These are the numbers you remember for CKM fitter paper?
That's why we were willing to do the flavor universal case.
Yeah.
It wasn't very strongly. But the way you guys right. presented it seemed stronger. You know, it's a matter of presentation as to.
Right. Yeah. It's both true. At this level,
the standard model is the thing, right?
What was that?
Both are better than the standard model.
Yes, right? That's true. Both are better. And I would say probably the best thing is to have both of them, class one and class two. Yes. That's the preferred. Okay. Right. So because in order to have new CP violation, you have to have new CP violating flavor diagonal phases. And that's a problem. That's a potentially a very serious problem, because you would also generate CP violating effects in flavor diagonal observables, like the EDMs, right? So the question is, does one avoid bounds on flavor diagonal phases from electric dipole moments? Well, at the level of operators, this question was taken up by Brian and Maxim. And luckily, so if you take CP violating class 2 operators that contribute to B sub S, you're fine, right? So at least that's okay. You're not ruled out at the level of the operators, right? However, if you go to concrete models, you might really have problems. So let's look at some concrete examples. For instance, example one, 2 Higgs doublet model plus minimal flare violation done by Burras et al. So you assume 2 Higgs doublet model and you stick in the minimal flare violation hypothesis. What does that mean is that, for instance, if you look at the couplings of Higgs to down quarks, there is going to be just the usual Yukawa plus a series in this flavor violating insertions of YUY dagger. Right? There's a whole series there. It gives type 1 and type 2 operators, so both of them. So in order to have CP violation for type 1, you need CP odd, CP even, Higgs mixing. That's where you get the CP violation for type 1 operators. And it gives EDMs close to experimental bounds or slightly above. So this is an example of a new physics model where you are not killed by the EDMs. Right? Let's say half of the parameter space that you would normally consider is killed by the EDMs, but there is a large part of the parameter space which is not killed by the EDMs. But you definitely have to worry. So you see, it's quite important, the fact that you have these flavor diagonal phases. Another example where normally you would be killed is, for instance, you take MSSM with minimal flavor violation and CP violation. That was Paradisiant. You? No. Straub? Different. MSSM plus minimal flavor violation. But you do not assume that CP is conserved. So what happens there is that you do need to make an ad hoc fix. The EDMs are a problem. For instance, if you look at these trilinear terms, you need to fix that this guy, this term is real, but the other ones are complex, which is really ad hoc. Right? You just have to postulate that this, for some reason, the first term in the expansion is real. Right? Why that should be, you know, it's really hard to imagine. Okay, there's of course many models on the market. I will not have time to go through them. I divided this slide into two parts, the first part and the second part. Well, the first part are the explanations which change the M12, so they're off-share. And this would be the 2 Higgs doublet model plus minimal flare revelation. For instance, the uplifted M is the same. Then the split third to the first two generation MSSM, the scalar octet exchanges by Wise and Trott. And there's the other set of models where you also enhance this decay width difference. So they take seriously the fact that the output of our fit gives the decay width difference, which is larger than the OPE value, the standard model value. However, these models, I would say, typically have problems with the fact that the branching measures of B sub D are precisely measured, right? So now you have to really check, and I think it was not done very carefully in these papers, you have to check that you're not, don't run into problems. You see, the problem is that here you are trusting the OPE, right? So as soon as I trust the OPE, I should take this as part of the constraint. The difference is the difference in delta gamma is 10%. So if I'm changing the difference in delta gamma by a factor of 2, I'm changing the branching ratios by 20%. I mean, the total gamma I'm changing by 10-20%. And this is a huge thing for the branching ratios. Right? I mean, you can change branching ratio easily by 100%. Where they split the third from the first two. That's exactly what they do.
I still don't know.
Okay.
I mean, why would you have to assume necessarily, for the sake of the models that enhance delta gamma, why would you need to? I mean, you could still float delta gamma but put a large phase in it. Right? Couldn't you still do that?
To do what?
To try to, I mean.
A phase in the
K. Yeah. Say you floated again and have a large, I mean, and this OPE is.
Yeah, but delta gamma, if you just float the phase, it will go as delta gamma cosine phi. So you always change the delta gamma to be smaller than the standard model value.
Okay.
All right, that's the change. So that's the effect. The delta gamma that you measure is delta gamma standard model times cosine phi. So you really need to have some on-shell new physics, which is at 5 GeV, right? So that's the problem. This is the problem. We have some new physics which is 5 GeV. Okay, the outlook. So is there, since Tevatron is not going to run for another 3 years, is this the end of the story? Are we going to have better measurements? Luckily, yes. Right? LHCb will measure the difference between the two. So the difference between the semileptonic B sub S asymmetry and the semileptonic B sub D symmetry. That's the thin line here that is hard to see. That's the prediction, the predicted measurement with one inverse femtobarn, just the statistics. The line is elliptic, it's really very narrow. So, of course, the question is how big the systematics will be. But you see that it's definitely this measurement will not be statistics dominated. So that's a good thing that, you know, at least they can they claim that they're able to do this. There's also going to be a phase from LHCb phase measurement. That's the predicted sensitivity. That's the standard model value. This is one inverse femtobarn. So one inverse femtobarn is 1 year of nominal running for LHCb. And that's the measurement of the phase. Right? This is 10%. You see that very quickly you can measure at 10%.
So that measurement okay. Will be expected
at
this year? They'll have the data.
Well, who knows? No, I mean, we'll see.
They'll have the data.
They will have the data. Then they have to analyze. So the group of Sheldon Stone is working on that one. Well, that's good news. And this has been a priority measurement for LHCb for a long time. So I think a lot of resources are going into both of these measurements. Okay. So the conclusions. The conclusions are the following. There's an observed Lyx-Ein dimuon asymmetry. And this is well described by new physics contributions to B sub S mixing. GMFV can at the same time accommodate small contributions to B sub D and large contributions to B sub S. It came from this chirality flipping operators. And then the presented analysis, I think it's useful to guide your model building. Thank you. For flavor.
The 3.5 sigma sounds like a lot, but I gather there have been many instances where such anomalies have disappeared.
absolutely. Yeah.
Is the consensus that this is unlikely to disappear?
No, absolutely not. No.
The fact that it fits with new physics sounds
Exactly. It sounds encouraging, and I think a sensible thing to do is to look at it and try to find now we have LHC running, so you really want to ask the question, how can you probe these models at LHC, right? For instance, that would be one way of approaching it. Maybe I didn't emphasize it enough, but I really want to stress that the better part of this anomaly rests on one measurement, which is the di muon anomaly. This was 3.2 sigma away, right? The mixing phase is now at the 2 sigma level. Okay, I cannot give the precise number. Two experiments have one is 0.8 sigma, the other one is at 2 sigma, so probably the combined is less than 2 sigma, right? It lies in the right ballpark. So it's in the right part of the parameter space that it fits with the di muon anomaly. Then there's the B2 tau nu, which both Bell and Babar, the measurements agree. It's above the standard model. But again, you know, you could say that this is cherry picking the data. It's hard to say, right? It's hard to say. And as you say, there's a history of these anomalies that disappear. I mean, 3 sigma is nothing, right? Yeah.
5 sigma per cent is
weird. Right, but all these thresholds are arbitrary to some extent, right? Right.
And just be very well, the measurements he mentioned, though, the fact that they are expected to be correlated in their deviation. And they are correlated in the deviations that you find. The correlations are what you would expect. It's consistent.
Yes, right. That seems
that's interesting.
Yes, absolutely. That's that small dot, but they're all overlapping. Yeah. Sure. The other matters are you didn't, maybe I missed it, but you didn't say much on what the new physics was, what the simplest situation.
Oh, okay. So maybe I wasn't explicit enough. I would say that the simplest explanation is the two Higgs doublet model with minimal flare violation. I think that's really the simplest thing, or the most, you know, what most people would be most comfortable with, right? Is you know, two Higgs doublet model, and then in order to rule out FCNCs, you have to have minimal flare violation. So, and the fact that this works is very interesting.
It's just a tree-level neutral scalar exchange with some mass splitting between the neutral scalars.
Yeah.
And then that just does
okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's issues with that, with EDMs. You don't think they're as serious as I think, but there are some issues with neutron EDMs.
So you're worried about the Burras paper that they didn't do the proper job?
Well, they never looked at the neutron EDMs.
They did, yeah. There's a second paper where they look at the EDMs.
But not the neutron EDM.
Oh, the neutron EDM, you say it's worse.
That's the problem. I also don't probably think it's important. I have issues with the second paper. We can talk about it.
Okay.
So the 2 gigs double model, what is the scales have to be light? A
couple hundred GeV.
And they're not ruled out by their,
no.
By direct constraints.
You can find them. One thing they didn't do, which we did on that, was looking at sort of collider discovery of those. So Tevatron, if it did run, could have found them. Or if they redo some of their analyses, there's some bulk there.
Charged and
you just make the charge neutral guy through a W, through the valence quarks. Very simple to do. Order 5, 10, come to bar. So it's a reasonable cross section.
What did it do?
Probably just the usual. So you have just charge guy and a neutral guy, so you get like E and T. So I think that's doable in principle, but it's LHC can also do. I don't know if one thing it has to have is basically the enhanced coupling to down quarks, to some degree, and then you can start to look at like multi V signals at LHC and creating them off of the collinear gluon splitting of the quarks.
Okay.
So all of that is pretty hopeful, actually. It's not a large Tambay scenario, but it's not Tambay to 1. In Tambay to speed colloquial to 1. But there's an enhanced coupling to down quarks. And you can, you know, you can tag the p quarks. So it's not totally hopeless. It's real. Is that your assessment?
Yeah. If it's real, exactly. More questions?